Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I am your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talk to Los Angeles-based comedian, actor, and writer, Reem Idan. Reem is a first-generation Iraqi-American. We talk about growing up Muslim in America. We talk about what happened that made her change courses in her life and drop her marketing job and pursue a life in comedy. Now, unfortunately, during our conversation, there was a big whoopsie-doo, and I looked over, and the recording had stopped. It had stopped recording. So I started it back up again and kept the conversation going, but some of the meat got lost. Nevertheless, I think it all makes sense, and I know you'll get something out of this, because there's something about Reem's perspective and strategies that make her very inspiring. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a filmmaker, a musician, a podcaster, a voiceover artist, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments, because there's an app that will make your life easier and your production so much better. Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes for links to Reem and to leave a review, because that helps other people discover this podcast. But most of all, I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So, Reem Idan?
Idan.
Reem Idan.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. It's got a little flair there.
Idan, yes.
Idan. You're here in New York. You're visiting from Los Angeles. You're a comic.
Indeed.
You were raised Muslim?
Yeah, you know, half Sunni, half Shiite, full shit show.
Aha, full shit show Muslim.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this all makes sense now. In retrospect.
Well, I was raised Christian Scientist Jew.
Oh, nice.
So we're like here representing world peace, I think.
There you go. And you know, the fact of the matter is, no one can hate us as much as we hate ourselves. You know what I mean?
Yes. It would be a lot of work.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's an interesting background. How was that?
Well, my mom is pretty traditional Jew,
mm-hmm.
not like she's very not religious. And my dad is a Christian Scientist.
Okay. So explain, all I know is they have the Christian Science reading rooms.
Yes. So Christian Science is a pretty extreme religion where they believe in God so much that they don't believe in doctors. They don't believe in any Western medicine. So if there's a sickness or anything, they just pray.
Yeah.
And they think that all sickness is kind of just like, well, they call it mortal mind. It's not real.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what the intersection is between that and like Eastern medicine, though, because I'm kind of into the wellness scene.
Like naturopath.
Yeah, like naturopath kind of stuff. Like
I'm into like learning about it, and I also like have some side projects in LA that I work on. Like I even produce a podcast through a organization called Den Meditation, which is a dope podcast, and we get like people from like all walks of life, and there's like some who talk about like Eastern philosophies and like healing your body, not necessarily with your mind, but with like meditation, and then just like living a different, more intentional lifestyle and stuff like that, which is
better eating and stuff like that,
which is more than praying. But I get, do they work hand in hand, or is it kind of like just prayer, like French fries and prayer?
The weird thing is they don't even really believe in nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you live your life and you're perfect because you're made from God.
Yeah.
So as long as you're in touch with God and pray, you will be perfect and perfectly healthy.
Interesting.
Yeah, they had to pass laws, I think, in the 80s where if you're raising a child, Christian scientist, you have to get them medicine because Christian scientist kids were dying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because they'd get sick and they wouldn't take them. They didn't want to get them their shots.
Yeah, I remember reading about stuff like that.
Yeah, so it's kind of...
Was your dad devout?
Yeah, he's pretty devout.
And did you get shots in medicine growing up?
Well, luckily I was pretty... They're divorced, so I was raised mainly by my mom. And this is like a whole thing growing up where, you know, battles between them two, making sure that I was taking my antibiotics when I had to.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Whoa, are they allowed to take like Tylenol?
No, they don't take anything. If they get a headache, they just pray it away. They go, oh, I have a headache. I just have to do some metaphysical work.
Can you like smoke weed?
No, they don't even drink. They don't smoke. No drugs, not even caffeine.
Can you do CBD?
Not CBD.
But it's natural.
Anything that alters your body or mind,
But CBD, there's hemp-derived CBD.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm all about. That my parents know about.
You are definitely from California.
Yeah, I'm like, listen. Well, I was born in Colorado too, so they're very interchangeable. I'm like, natural, from the earth.
So I read in your bio that you're first generation.
First generation, yeah.
So your mom and dad are from Iraq?
They are from Iraq.
Okay, so...
You've heard of it.
I've heard of it, yes. It's pretty popular around here.
Yeah, I learned about my home country on CNN.
Did you? In around 2003?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I actually have been to Iraq.
You have? Your parents are from there.
They're from there, yeah. So my parents are both from Baghdad. Mm-hmm. And they met in Baghdad in the 80s. Mm-hmm. They have a great whirlwind kind of romance. My dad was basically... So it wasn't an arranged marriage, but it was like... Hey, my dad's sister knew my mom, and then it was one of those, like, they ask about you, like, does she come from a good family?
Uh-huh.
And then, like, he sends, like...
What does that mean, a good family? Wealthy family?
It means, like, no, not necessarily wealthy, but just respectable, like, good reputation. It's all about reputations in the Middle East. Like, reputation is all you have. I even lived in the Middle East for a little bit, in Bahrain, which is, like, a small island.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember reputation was, like, drilled into your mind, like... You don't talk to boys because girls who talk to boys have a bad reputation. And like, whatever you do will stay with you. Yeah, it's so bizarre. So that kind of stuck with me even to today that I'm like, in everything I do, even good things, like with my stand-up, I'm like, I want to have a good reputation. Or like, I don't talk shit about people because I'm like, I don't want a bad reputation because that just was ingrained
in
the culture.
But in their sense, a bad reputation is like a woman being too forward or a woman maybe...
Oh, it's not even about being too forward. It's about like... a lot of it revolves around dating boys. You know what I mean? Like, that's a bad reputation.
Like,
or
a good woman wouldn't even date?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. I wonder if it's the same thing for guys.
I doubt it.
You know, it's the culture of double standards. Mm. Ooh, this is a delicious topic. Because I was talking about this last night. Because I'm here for the New York Arab American Comedy Festival. And so there's other female Arab comedians. And we were talking about how, like, you know... In an audience, let's say specifically a Middle Eastern audience, so guys get away with so much more. They can talk about so much more, including like topics like dating or whatever, they go to sex or whatever, or drinking, all these like, ooh, topics.
Right.
And they can get away with it. The second I go edgy, not even like I'm pretty PC, but I have slightly edgy material and the air just gets sucked out of the room. Like you can just, there's just this weird... And I don't even think it's intentional, but it's just when a girl says things, they're just like, ooh, because like we're held to a different standard.
Yeah.
Which is, so I guess, yeah, it
is. Yeah, you're supposed to be the beacon of purity.
Exactly.
In some weird way.
We are the white flower in the garden.
Yeah. Is that how your parents raised you? Are they mortified?
As the white flower in the garden?
Yeah, or just as, you know, not subservient in the pure sense, but more in the background, wait for the mail to come?
No, no. My parents are pretty liberal, actually.
They are.
Yeah, but, you know, they used to be strict growing up. So parents came from Iraq. They met, like I said, I didn't even finish that story. Sorry, I jump around a lot in my mind.
I'll try and keep you on track.
Yeah, it's funny because I genuinely have ADD, and I just am like, I don't want Adderall. I think I'm good, because I think I'll get to, I just don't want to sweat and poop immediately. Is that what happens on Adderall?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, just to pop a pill and poop. I'm not into that.
that's what coffee's for.
Pop a pill and poop. Whoo! Like,
so your parents met in Baghdad.
In Baghdad. My mom, it was one of those, like, is she from a good family?
Mm-hmm.
And then my dad was going back to school in America because he has two masters and a PhD. And his daughter turned out to be a comedian. Woo! But he was like, I'm going back in a month. So
when you say going back, so he got his master's here?
He got one master's in Colorado.
Okay.
And then...
in what?
In economics, and then statistics, and then IT.
So he was raised in Baghdad and he came here to study?
To study. That's okay. How, yeah. I have a joke. I'm like, you know, Arabs came to this country either as students, refugees, or on a private jet. That's the only way we get here. But so he had gotten a master's in Fort Collins, Colorado at Colorado State University. And then he went back and then met my mom and was like, listen, I have a month before I go back to the United States. So if you want to get married, great. But we have to like get married and bounce. And so she was like, okay.
How long had they known each other when they got married?
Seen each other a few days. Like,
did their families know each other?
No,
before?
She, my mom was friends with his sister, like okay. Best friends with his sister. So, but the families didn't know each other. So it was like a very official courting process.
Was it kind of a blind date?
It was like my dad picked my now aunt and my mom up from school,
mm-hmm.
and he drove them. And he's like, "Do you guys want the ice cream?" And then took her to the ice cream parlor.
Sounds creepy.
I know. My dad was in a creeper van, just like, "You guys want the ice cream?
I would pick you up from school."
What about candy?
And how much younger is your mom?
14 years.
Okay, yeah. So he's picking her up from school.
Yeah, which is funny. Like, I was doing the math. I was like, I'm 27 now, so if I were to date someone 14 years older than me, that's 41,
yeah.
Right? Is that 41? Yes.
Yeah.
That's aggressive nowadays, but back then it was chill.
Also in Baghdad, I don't know. What is that normal?
Yeah, that's normal. I mean, still, I think their age difference is a little more than normal.
What's normal for...
Like 5 years is normal.
Okay.
Like 5 years older,
so
maybe
14.
10. 14's, I think, a big gap.
It was still a lot there.
Yeah, but my parents are still happily in love. Like, they're so good together. It's crazy.
Does she keep him young or does he make her old?
She keeps him young, I think. But my good. yeah but my dad is, he's where I get my humor from. Uh-huh. So like, I feel like he's young-hearted. But so they moved to America, and then what happened?
I mean, she left her whole family for this guy she barely knows.
Yeah, she had a month to get to know him, and then they bounced.
What did her family think? Were they worried about that?
No, because I think it was like a good opportunity. They're like, you know, like, he's a good guy, mm-hmm. and like, he has a really good path ahead of him, and he's going to America. Like, this is a...
Did they have the thought of like, oh, it's going to be a better life for her?
Yeah, it's going to be a better life. Although my mom came from a really good family. Like, my...
very respectable, I heard.
Very respectable family, yes. Very good on paper. Yeah. Excellent breeder. But her dad was like a lawyer and like very respected. And so mm-hmm. it was just...
Why would she even want to leave Baghdad?
I don't think it was just like, oh, like, I'll go with him because he's going to America. It was just like, you know, he's a good guy. And my mom... She's really pretty. Like, my mom mm-hmm. does not age. It's bizarre.
Uh-huh.
And I know this because all of my friends' dads would hit on her throughout, like, my life. And every time I go out with her, everyone's like, oh, my God, hitting on my mom. I'm like, stop it. Like,
in front of you.
In front of me. I'm like, what's wrong with me? I'm like, look, I'm 20 years younger. What's up? No? Okay.
Yeah. She's got more experience.
Yeah. My mom's just like, oh, my God. But what was I saying? Yeah, so it wasn't like, oh, this is a ticket to freedom. Because back then, things were great in Iraq. Like, everyone was... my parents talk about it, too. They're like, you know, we were a thriving civilization. Like, even, I think, like, early... Like, in the 70s and 80s, like, Baghdad was booming, you know?
It was.
And now it's a completely different story, but...
What changed?
Just foreign interference.
Yeah.
And
was Saddam Hussein in power in the 80s?
He was. He was in power, but... That's the thing. That's kind of like the trade-off. is, yeah, he was a dictator, and yeah, you know, like, he did a lot of fucked up things,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, there was peace in the country, and right. so, like, what's
it was
more
stabilized.
About it? It was stabilized, yeah. Like, even when I went, I visited in 2000, and he was still in power,
mm-hmm.
and it was already kind of shitty at that point because of, like, you know, the Gulf War and stuff like that, but it just, you weren't afraid to go on the street. Like, I was normal, like, you know, going out with my cousins and living life, but now there's no way in hell I'd go back.
You gotta educate me a little bit, because I know there's Sunnis and Shiites.
Yeah.
So one branch was better off under Saddam than the other. Is that right?
I think Sunnis were better off under... it's so crazy because, like, this whole Sunni versus Shia thing has been a thing, but not really.
For, like, forever?
Forever, but not really. Like, I've lived in the Middle East. I saw them coexist, you know? Like.
Right.
When I lived in Bahrain, which is, I think, a predominantly Shia country, everyone was fine. Like, so now it's different, I'm sure, but there's a lot of things that are just, you know, media interference and just kind of like.
From your perspective, what we know about Saddam Hussein here, mm-hmm. have we been given a lot of propaganda? It's pretty accurate.
I think it's pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually worse than what we know. But I will say, like...
Like, the fields of dead people didn't... Like, after the government, the U.S. government invaded, and they found a field of, like, 30,000...
The graves.
The graves.
That's true.
Okay, so that's pretty bad.
It's crazy. When I was in Iraq, we saw his caravan drive by, and then they're like, turn around, because, like, they... If it was, like, his sons, they could, like... pick girls off the street, like, look, that one, I want that one, and then, like, you go, and that's it.
You just disappear.
Yeah, isn't that nuts? I was a fat kid, though. I was like, nobody wants this.
I mean, that's good. Maybe your dad was like, let's fatten her up.
Oh, they're like,
So why would people go out to even see them if they could just grab someone off the street?
I mean, but at the same time, that's what you hear. It's not like I was like, oh, this is a confirmed thing, you know, like, that's what you hear.
Right.
But no one would go out and see them. I was just walking on the street, like, going to the market or something. And
well,
I've just
heard that about China. If you speak badly about the government, I heard this firsthand.
Oh, yeah.
That a van will come the next day and throw you in the van and you're gone.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Just for speaking bad about the government.
There's a, this comic, Zainab Johnson, is that her name? She's also Muslim. She's actually from Brooklyn, but, I saw her do a set last week. And she was talking about how she did some shows in China, and she was, like, Skyping with her manager, and she just was not into China.
Yeah.
And her manager was asking how it was, and she's like, oh, I hate it here, blah, blah, blah. And then her Skype just shuts down, and she couldn't get it back up for, like, X amount of time. I was like, oh my God, no, that's so scary.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they keep stuff pretty locked down from what I've heard.
It's insane. We forget how lucky we are to be in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also crazy that, like, humans would inflict this much power over people and, like, try to, like, control things. It's insane to me.
Yeah, but there was a comic here. This happened about 8 months ago. He made a joke on Twitter about Secret Service,
mm-hmm.
Just like some sort. I forget exactly what it was. And then the next day or hours later, Secret Service was at his door.
No.
Yeah, and they were questioning him and everything. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, he made a whole, you know, thing about it. He got some press out of it, but it's pretty crazy that a tweet. Just from a comic.
You know, I think I heard about this, actually. Was it about, like, Secret Service and Trump and something like that? And they were like...
Yeah, I forget exactly what it was, but it was some sort of play on words and play on, like, assassination kind of thing. So they are...
Play on assassination.
Yeah,
okay, that's the secret here.
Yeah.
He called the Secret Service fat, and they showed up at a store and said, no, he used the word assassinate.
Interesting. Yeah, I should find out exactly what it was, but they are listening.
Yeah, I sent a text to my friend who I was performing with last night. He's a great comic, Farouk Amira. But I was like, take pictures of me and I'll take pictures of you. And he didn't send the pictures. So I was like, send me the photos, terrorist.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, I know. And then I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, yeah. Especially you being.
But also, like, why would I be so on the nose? Like, who uses that word? Who's like, hello, my fellow terrorists? Like, one uses that.
She's trying reverse psychology on us.
Is she or isn't she? I don't know.
Yeah, because you are a Muslim woman.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that... you know, this is something that's you think about every day.
Yeah, every day. I wake up, brush my teeth, pop an Adderall, take a poop. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. My place in America.
Yeah.
So, all right. So your parents, your dad's very well educated. Did he come here for work or to finish studies?
Okay. So he came here to finish studies. And the reason I'm here today was...
Oh, I know why. I know what they did.
They made a freedom baby. No, they didn't. So they actually had every intention of going back to Iraq. Mm-hmm. But in 90, which is the year I was born, is that the year the Gulf War happened? Yeah.
Around there.
Around then.
Yeah.
Maybe the year before. That happened and their passports expired and the embassy shut down. So they were like reverse exiled in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So then the kids popped out and they're like, oh, shit, I guess we can't go back. Which was like, I joke about it now because I'm like, it's great. Like, I love being, you know, an American and living here and all the opportunities and stuff like that. But it's sad for them because up until recently, they hadn't gone back to Iraq. Like, they had totally assumed, like, oh, we'll be there for a couple of years. And then we'll, you know, come back and, you know, see our families and start our lives in Iraq. But that never happened. So it was kind of like they never got to say a real true goodbye.
Right.
It was just like, oh, shit, we're staying in this country. And then it just... So, like, I'll sometimes ask my parents, like, is it crazy to you that your kids speak English as a first language? Like, mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, I never thought... Like, I love those moments of, like, did you ever think that blah, 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 now like blah, blah, blah?
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're like, it's... I never thought my kids would be born and raised in the United States and, like... be living these American lifestyles.
So how does that work out legally there? The embassy shuts down. We're at war.
So they had to get like a lawyer and claim asylum. Mm-hmm. I think they claimed asylum, which is it's crazy.
It sounds like a bureaucratic mess.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. Once I moved to Spain, like I was telling you earlier, that's when I actually got a genuine appreciation for what my parents did mm-hmm. to move to another country and start a new life. So right. like I spoke a little bit of Spanish before I went there, but it is so fucking hard to... pick up and like start over somewhere new where you don't really speak the language. Like my mom basically learned English here. I think she took a few years in, you know, in high school, but you know,
Because it's not even the language, it's the culture, it's the references,
the references. Yeah, it's insane. And to like have to then have kids, and my mom was young when she had us. I think she was like 21 when my sister was born. I think she was like 23 or 24 when I was born.
Wow.
So like, I mean, back then that was normal too, but it's just like, imagine being in a country and like your kids are like, mama, and they say words you don't know. And you're like, what the fuck is happening?
Well, why didn't they raise you speaking Arabic?
They did, but just by default being in this country, I mm-hmm. feel like English was what I picked up most. So I do speak Arabic. I speak, read and write.
You do?
Yeah, but I prefer English. I prefer Spanish.
we'll get there. I want to know why you left. So you were fluent in Arabic mm-hmm. as well. That's interesting.
My parents used to force us to go to Arabic school mm-hmm. after normal school. So imagine going to school from like 7 to 3, then going home and eating. And then they're like, time to go to school again. And then I'd be in Arabic school. This was like two or three times a week.
Oh, that's horrible.
I hated it. I was like, I hate it. Fuck this language.
Yeah.
And then we would like cry. I have a younger brother and my older sister and I would cry like, no, please don't take us.
This
is in Colorado. So they would bribe us. They would like take us to like a grocery store and we'd get candy on the way there. And then on the way back, we'd always get fast food. And like, they wonder why I was a fat kid. Like literally, this is how I got fat for Arabic. Like, come on. Right.
That was your reward.
That was my reward. I was like, I hate this language. I hate it.
So what was your dad working? What was he doing for work here?
He ended up becoming a professor at CSU. Mm-hmm. And now he works for the government. He works for like the USDA.
Oh, wow.
It sounds so much cooler when I say the government.
Yeah.
He just like does like statistical.
So here's where the machine stopped recording, and I pick it back up again. Here we go.
I wrote a spec script. And I can't get into too much of the details, but this like opportunity popped up where someone was like, have you written scripts before? And I was like, no. I was like, I don't know how. And they're like, well, you know, like, you should consider it because, like, you know, if you write a spec script, like, we can give it to the right people. And so I was like, okay. And I ended up teaching myself how to write in a weekend. Literally, I just got 3 scripts of the same TV show. And then I, like, taught myself. I was like, okay, it looks like there's, like, a conflict that's here. Mm-hmm. And it comes back here. All right, cool. And then I just wrote my own version of it. And then it got into the right hands. And I ended up getting an offer as a staff writer on a really, really, really big TV show.
What show was that?
I can't even
can't say
the offer fell through.
Okay.
Like because the budget got cut for new writers. And I was like, no, because it was literally like a Cinderella moment. I was like, oh my God, I wrote one script and I'm going to go on my favorite TV show. Right. And so it fell through. There's a lot of lessons in that too, because I was like, this is it, my golden ticket. And I've had to really like, no, bro, you got to keep
going
with the
process. Was it a spec script for that show?
For that show, okay. Which doesn't even happen. They say it doesn't happen in Hollywood anymore. You have to write original shows. Mm-hmm. But it was like this fluke thing and blah, blah, blah. But that ended up getting me a manager, because I was like, when they got the call to be a writer on the show, they're like, you know, you should get a rep, because just like, you know, for the contracts and stuff, but it's easy because you're a young writer in Hollywood with a job. I was like, cool. So I ended up getting a manager at,
did you call the management company? Or did they call
you? My sister actually works at a production company.
Okay.
And, she, like, when she found out the news, like, flipped out and told like the people, and they're like, oh, she should talk to the person who reps our directors. And then like, that's how I got repped there. So that was cool. And then all of the offer fell through. It like taught me a lot about Hollywood. I was like, oh, I see.
Don't get excited until it's
already
over.
Don't get excited until you sign the goddamn contract.
Right.
Like there's something happening right now. And like, I was supposed to sign the contract last week, but I'm not talking about it until I sign the contract. I'm so ready. So we'll see. I actually just saw an email as I was walking in about like some from the company. I was like,
did you check it?
No. Cause I was like, I'm not going to look at it. I want to sign the contract before I look at any more things.
Right.
Yeah,
that's in the entertainment industry. You just can't really get excited until
it's done.
Yeah.
And even when it's done, it's like, what if it doesn't get released?
Right.
So that's how I got writing representation and acting. Yeah. That's how I got management. Mm-hmm. And then, but from there I had to like follow it up. It's like, cool. You got like a golden that opportunity didn't work. What are you going to do now?
Right.
And that's when I was like, okay, cool. Got to write another script, and then wrote like an original script. And then I just started hustling. It was like getting more gigs and then finally like asking around. Now that I have that network of people in LA who like either work at management companies or agencies or other like production companies or whatever it is, it's like, hey, you know, I'm looking for this. Hey, do you know anyone like, and then it's less of a like, you know, submitting your scripts to agencies and hoping that they'll read it. Cause that shit doesn't work. Maybe it does, but it's better to have, better to like have friends and then be like, prove that you've been doing things, because I'm so much more likely to get something or be recommended if they're like, oh, this is Reem, like she got this and that, she's performed here and she's like doing all these cool things. It gives you like some clout. And so like that's how I got my agency. And then I just recently got a college agent from just performing. So just keep performing and keep doing it and like establish yourself instead of like hoping that you'll get discovered. It's like, no, I don't need to get I'll fucking work until it's there,
right?
And then and also write this shit down. Because literally, like, a year, I was like, I just want a manager and an agent. And then it, like, started happening. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I had to write it down and really, like,
what do you mean write it down? You wrote down your intentions?
On, like, a goal. Yeah, my intention. I had, like, a goal list.
You do? You write?
No, I have, like, they're fucking everywhere. There's not even one consolidated list. But I remember writing down, I think it was, like, oh, like, a New Year's list or something, like, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended up happening. Some shit doesn't happen, like losing weight. That's always just...
Did you write that down?
I always write that down. It's literally like all I wish for on birthdays. I'm just like, please, I want to be skinny.
So what do you call... Because I've heard of that before. You write down your intentions. Mm-hmm. And for
to
some,
manifest it or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah.
And is it is there a power to that?
I don't know.
Something about writing it down?
I think there is. Oh, absolutely. I think like when you write it down, whether it's any goal, it's just... you're truly putting intention behind it. Once it's on paper and it's not just a thought, it's like a joke. When you have a joke in your mind, you're like, I'm gonna remember it. No, you're not.
Right.
You're like, it's gonna go away.
Yes.
Or, you know, it'll get distorted. But when you write it down, it's there. You know, it's solid. It's something you can hold in your hand.
Yeah, this is cool, because I lived in LA for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And when I moved to New York, this was a big difference between the two places.
Yeah.
New York is not as into self-help kind of things as Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That's kind of pretty common.
I totally see that. Yeah.
Right. In Los Angeles, a lot of people have these kinds of affirmations.
They have manifestation board parties.
Yes. Manifestation boards. Right.
Where like you just get a bunch of magazines and you just snip and you post it up.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited. I mean, I would have gone, to be honest, but I had a scheduling conflict. But like, it's so much more fun to talk shit and be like, yeah, well, I was going to go.
So you put it on your wall. You might put like, every day, I am great. I am worthy.
No, I don't get that into it.
No.
There's a cafe called Cafe Gratitude in LA, and all of their menu items are like, I am. It, literally, they're named like Gratitude, and one's like happy, and one is like sentimental. And when you order, you have to go, I am sentimental, and then they respond to you like, yes, you are. It's like, what? Shut up. Like, come on.
I was at the one in Berkeley. It's pretty painful.
It's so painful. I was like, I don't... I am voluptuous.
that's the salad dish.
Yeah, it's the salad. Do you want fake bacon on there? I'm like, You mean coconut? No, thank you. Do you want bacon? No. But, you know, I actually, this is cool. I love finding these lists and being like, oh, shit, and like checking it off and forgetting that I'd written it. But I have...
Wait, how often do you refer back to them?
Not that often, whenever I find them, because I'll put them on a paper and I'm like, I'm going to put this up, and I never put it up. I'll lose it. Right. But then I'll find them and be like, oh, shit, I accomplished that. But I have one board in my room that I filled out in like 2014 or 15. I had just gotten back from Thailand, and I was jet-lagged, and I couldn't sleep. And I was like, this is actually when like the wheel started turning to do comedy. Was I was traveling, and I just remember like my friends were like, you're so funny, and you live in LA, like you don't do improv or like acting. And I was like, no. And like I gave myself, and we always give ourselves excuses, like when I have an office job, yeah, I should. And then I just started like thinking about it more and more, and I was like, why don't I, like, why am I giving myself these excuses? I'll take an improv class, or I'll take it whatever. And then I got back from Thailand, and I was like up all night, and I was like, what do I really want to accomplish? And that's where this actually all started. Oh, I should give that night way more credit than I give it. Well, I just sat there and I was like, okay, I am. And then I just wrote, like, I see myself as like an actor and a host and a comedian and a digital nomad. She was like, you just, you know, work off your laptop whenever you are. And right. then all these different things. And I've accomplished a lot on that. Like, it took a while of like staring at that poster every day when I woke up, and I was like, interesting. And I'd look at it and be like, okay, cool.
So what do you do? You see these things, you see these manifestations that you want to create.
Yeah.
And you do, but you actually have to do the work.
You can't have just to
stare
the
at the board.
Yeah. Well, you look at the board to be reminded, because like you'll forget.
So, and that keeps you on track rather than just like scrolling through Facebook or shopping on Amazon.
Totally. Yeah. Just look at the board, and I'm like, so there's some things I haven't accomplished on it. I feel like 30 under 30 is on there, like the Forbes list. We'll see if that happens. I don't know. But I'm like, why not? If I wrote it down and all this other stuff is happening, then you start to like convince yourself that it's work. You're like, well, if this could happen, well, that could happen. And then.
Right. And if you believe it could possibly happen.
Yeah.
Maybe like becomes like a part of your energy.
Totally. Well, and even just believing it, like you have to believe in what you're doing. Like if you don't believe that you can actually do it, then you actually stop yourself, because you'll be like, no, I'm not as funny as them. No, I'm not as good. No, whatever. And then you're the one who like limits yourself from applying for things because you don't think you're good enough.
Right.
Or you don't think it's possible. I'm not saying like believe in the foo-foo woo-woo, like I'm going to be a leprechaun. And then, you know.
Well, it's weird with stand-up, because sometimes you feel like you're really funny.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you feel like you're not.
Well, that's the audience's fault.
Well, that happens. You know, you could have the exact same set that you know kills.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's just the wrong audience or the wrong time.
Exactly. Always blame the. It's never our fault. They just don't get it. Like, what? Oh, you're not laughing. Okay. This is too elevated for you.
Yeah. In Los Angeles, how often are you able to get up there and do stand-up?
Like a couple times a week. Mm-hmm. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Yeah. But generally, I have like every week, a few times a week. It just depends. When I'm writing something, like I'm just about to start writing something, and I like go away. Like I don't perform as much. Like
you disappear into the
writing?
I
disappear. Yeah, I disappear. Because I have to put my attention in one thing. Mm-hmm. And I will still do stand-up if someone comes after me. But like the hustle of it to get on shows, it's not like I have representation and stuff. But like, they're not booking me on the small shows, you know,
right.
Like
they're not booking bar shows.
They're
for
not
you.
Booking bar shows. Yeah. You know, my dad called me the other day and he's like, I saw a comedian. Her name is Wong. What? I was like, Ali Wong. Yes. You know, she's performing at a theater to thousands of people. Why don't you do that instead of bars and restaurants?
Right.
I was like,
brilliant.
Well, yeah. I was like, well, God, I just can't imagine. I haven't thought of that yet. I was like, well, Ali Wong, to get to this big theater, probably performed at bars and restaurants, right?
Right.
So yeah, like I still have to hustle. And when I'm focused on something, I'm not like, well, how can I book up my next Tuesday night, the night I need to spend writing, you know?
And what is the end goal? Like if you have, do you have one end goal or are there several?
I just want to be funny for money. I want to be honestly, I really admire Amy Schumer's career. Mm-hmm. I think just to like be in control. Like she's in control of her voice, right? So she writes and she acts and she produces and she's done sketch and she is in film and she does stand up and she has her specials and like she's a powerful voice and you say that name and it resonates, but she has her own brand. I feel like that's what I like, because I don't want to just be a writer or just be a stand up or just be an actor. Like I want to do it all.
Do you think if you obtained her kind of fame, like, you know, she's a multimillionaire, do you think that would affect your drive? If all of a sudden your manifestation board is on like this humongous mega mansion with gold walls.
No, I don't think so.
Would it be hard to stay driven?
I don't think so, because I'm not necessarily driven by the end goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am, but just from meditating and like reading these books and stuff, I've become more about the journey. I even wear a bracelet that says like create your, like it says journey on it.
Journey like the band?
Well, it says create and then journey on the other side to like remind me like I'm creating my own journey, and also it's like be present. And so I've gotten better about that, to like not be like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And just be like, this is fucking cool. This is fucking cool. This is awesome. Take this in.
Right.
So I don't think so. I mean, money's going to be like, I know the money's going to come. Hmm. I've just started getting paid for stand up, but not like making all this money, but it's not what's driving me. It's like a cool bonus. I'm like, oh, great, great. I know it's going to come. I don't know how else to put it, but like, it's not, when it does come, I'm not going to be like, whoa, holy shit. You know, like,
right. How are you so sure that it's going to come? Is this...
I just think because I finally started believing in myself. Like, I finally started doing, you know, what I should be doing. And when you put that much effort and intention into something and truly make it, like, your art form and your business, when mm-hmm. you start treating yourself like a business, which is what we are,
yeah.
then just get better. I always say that
artists are entrepreneurs.
We are, yeah. yeah. And it's like, you know, you were an entrepreneur, like... enhance your product and make a better product, keep putting it out there. Like, if you're gonna like be releasing this awesome, you know, products, then eventually there's gonna be a market for it. So I'm just building my market,
right? But not I'm not saying this to put any doubt or anything, totally. But some talented people just never make it.
Totally. But you pivot. I didn't say the money's gonna come from stand-up. I said the money's gonna come, like, I know that I'm at least putting an effort to, you know, enhance my skill set and do all these different things. And like I said, there's writing, there's all these different things. I just have identified that this is the path I should be on. And I know
for now.
Yeah. Right. And then if that's the path you should be on, like, embrace it, and something along the way will lead you to more success.
Right. Do you think this is tied into your, spirituality at all?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to be. Well, I don't know. It's either that or just cause I've gotten content. Like, I'm not saying I'm settling. I'm still very much, you know, seeking a better lifestyle and things like that, but I'm content with where I am, and I'm riding this wave. And I think that came from meditation. It took a lot of meditation to get here, and a lot of self-acceptance I really did struggle, especially seeing my peers like get promoted and, you know, move on and like their entertainment industry jobs. And I'm like, oh, what the fuck? I'm like,
your peers when you were doing marketing?
When I was doing marketing. Yeah. Like, they're all getting like doing, you know, these things and like really nice salaries and stuff like that. And like all the nice cars, and I'm still driving my car from high school. I'm just like, it's chill. I don't need these expenses. Like, I even spend money in a different way. Not because I'm like, oh, I'm going to be like, you know, cheap. But I'm just like, I don't need a new car. Like, I just don't, like, cool. I'll get, if I want something, I'll buy it. But I'm like, just be chill. Whatever. It's going to work out.
Right. But you don't subscribe to that. Act rich and you'll become rich. Just spend all the money you want.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, I sometimes pretend. I'm like, it's fine. It's fine.
That's a dangerous philosophy, right?
Super
there.
Dangerous. Oh, when I got that writing job, I started spending money I didn't have.
Right.
And then I was like, uh-oh. it took a second to get out of that hole. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's so admirable, the dedication that you have to it. You know, like, so if you were meditating during your marketing job, do you think you would have been more jazzed about it?
I was meditating, but I had meditated like during different parts of my life. I didn't just start meditating then. I can't remember when I started meditating, but I think I had like done it once a year or like twice a year or there 7 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
No, because the entire time I was like, I know I should be doing something else. I know. And like people kept being like, but you work at Disney, or like you have a cool job. And I'm like, yeah, but I know I should be doing something else.
Right.
Actually, I remember my friend was like, let's go to like a crystal party. It was like a full moon party. And I was like, okay.
Uh-huh.
And I went, and it was like a bunch of girls, and we were in like a chandelier shop that they let us use. So it was kind of cool. There was like lights and stuff. And we were like in a circle, and they're like, all right, now with the divine feminine power inside of you, tell us something. I forgot. And I just like, I had a moment where I was like, I just feel so stuck. And this was when I was at my marketing job. So I was doing hippie dippy shit. Yeah. And I was sure meditating, but I was like, I just feel so stuck. I was like, everyone looks at me and says, you have this awesome life. I was like, and it's fine. I'm grateful, but it's just like, I'm not.
Cause you're making good money. You have a steady income.
Yeah. And I was like doing cool things. I once got paid overtime to go to Disneyland and got front of the line access to like everything. And I was like with a group of mommy bloggers, and there was a point where they were like chanting my name, and I was like, this is the fucking happiest day of my life. Like, this is, this is as good as it gets. But I was, even with that, I was just like, this is just, there's something wrong, and I can't figure out how to articulate it or what needs to be solved.
Mm-hmm. So what makes you feel satisfied? Is it satisfying to just like write a script that you're happy with, do a stand-up set you're happy with, or to get hired and get the accolades? Or is it when you deliver a joke as you intended, or is it when the audience applauds?
Oh, you know what? I've thought about this recently, because I try to keep my ego in check, but I feel like a lot of the initial rush comes from the recognition. Mm-hmm. And I think that just stems from my childhood and like wanting to do good for my parents to be like, good job, you know, pat on the back.
And the recognition is the audience.
Is the audience laughing. Yeah. Or it's like, my script is hot or whatever it is. Or like people saying like, oh, this and that. Or,
when
like,
you hear a buzz from your script.
When I hear the buzz. Yeah. That's, I don't know if that's like the goal, but that's a really nice like feedback mechanism where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm doing something right. And then I feel like I'm doing something right.
But isn't that a very sketch?
It's such a slippery slope.
Yes, because you're hanging your hat on like other people.
Exactly. And I'm happy that I'm aware of it, because I feel like that's a really big step. I'm like, oh shit, like don't just
right. You can't let the audience decide your happiness.
But you know what? That I think I learned a lot from that writing gig that fell through. Was when I really was turned on to like, because I was like, I'm going to be that girl who writes on the show and blah, 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 blah. And I like had built up this ego for myself. I'm like, this is my image and blah, blah, blah. And when like the rug got pulled from underneath me, I was like, oh, wait, what? And then it was more of like, okay, well, you're still that same person.
Right.
Maybe not with that title. Right. Maybe not, you know, with the recognition. And that's when I started to be aware of it. So I'm not going to lie and say it doesn't give me a high, but I'm super aware of it. I'm like, oh, this is nice.
Right. So how do you figure that out within yourself?
That's a great question.
Because it is a slippery slope. And, you know, I perform a lot. I won't say the club, but it's a club for mostly tourists.
Yeah.
So it's not really my audience.
Yeah.
You know, I do kind of more edgy, darker stuff.
Yeah.
This is like middle America. But for some reason, I perform there a lot.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for them to find me out. Not the right person for this club, but the audiences vary, but they're mainly, you know, pretty mainstream America. So I've decided to not when I try new material, I don't let them decide. I try to like figure out, is this what I want to be saying?
That's great.
And then sometimes it gets a laugh. Sometimes it gets a, I don't like that.
Yeah. I'm afraid of those audiences.
Until we get to a place where the audience is coming to see us.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, oh, we know what Reem does. We like her brand of comedy. Yeah. And then it's your people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so much better that way.
Yeah.
I could imagine.
I can wait for that day. Please let it happen soon. Uh-huh. We're here just for Reem.
Do you see that? Is that on your board?
Yeah, that's not on my board. Yeah, it should be on my board. I haven't detailed it out that hard. Mm-hmm. I should go through and make that board is a couple years old. We got to make a new board.
Where you're drawing people that like your brand of comedy and are familiar with you and your whole thing.
That's a great, what a wonderful thing to come from this podcast, besides the great conversation and wonderful tasting water that I was offered. It's the water. The water's better here.
Yes.
That's a great thing to add. I think I need to get, I'd like to go through my list and just make it more specific now that I have.
If you want to send it to me, I'll edit it.
Yeah, absolutely. Put it on your board. Yeah. It's like taping it up to the wall. Like,
you want me to edit your manifestation board?
Yeah. I also want to be 125 pounds.
That's written there every like three spaces.
Yeah, it's like 125, 125. It's like in all my passwords. I shouldn't have said that. don't know where.
Do you talk to your Muslim parents about all this meditation and spiritual stuff you do?
Not in detail, but they know about it. They know that I, you know, produce the podcast and I meditate all the time.
Mm-hmm. But this doesn't involve a God.
That's fine. I mean, it's not religious. It's
not religious.
It's just a practice.
Do they find that hedonistic or blasphemous?
No, but I keep being like, whenever they visit LA, I'm like, do you guys want to go to the den and meditate? And like, no.
Like, have they ever tried? I mean,
no, but I want them to. It's not that they're against it. They're just like, my dad literally is just like, I don't want to sit down in a room or what, and sit in silence. No.
Right. Have you told them your theory of how you've merged Buddhism with Islam?
Yeah, no. No. We don't have that deep of conversations.
Yeah.
I think it's something with growing with like immigrant parents is just like there's some things that you just there's topics you just don't touch. Like it's just I don't know how to explain it. It's just too much effort. It's too much backstory and like I don't want to get into an argument, and I'm not going to change anyone's opinion. So I just kind of like to keep it light, you know?
Would you say it's a more superficial relationship?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I would kind of, I mean, I'm really close with my parents. They know everything, but I don't get into like philosophical debates. That's also not my personality. I don't like debating. I don't like, I'm not confrontational. So I'm like, whatever. And that's the negative byproduct of like meditation is I sometimes have no opinion. I'm like, whatever. That's cool. Yeah. Whatever. Like,
I'm the rock and you're just floating over.
Yeah. Literally. I'm like, y'all are just a bunch of rivers and I'm the rock. I'm chilling.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to be like the, you know, hyper angry
Muslim
not even or Buddhist
true. Well, I just don't see the point in getting angry about things. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah. Well, shit hit the fan, so let's figure out something around it. Or like, okay, well, he sucks, so
right.
No, I just like, I also like, when I was growing up, it was like there's certain topics you don't tell your parents. You know, you're like, keep, it's almost like leading a double life sometimes. I wrote a script about this called Brown Sheep, but like
Brown Sheep.
Yeah. I'm nice. Like, sometimes like you have one life going with like your American, you know, life and culture and stuff. And then like the life that you have with your parents and culture and traditions and stuff. And they very rarely intersect. And when they do, it's weird. And like, it feels like you're two different people and then it's just bizarre. So a lot of topics like dating and stuff, like I can't talk to my parents about that. It just doesn't feel right. Like when, and it's not that they don't know I've dated, like, they knew that I had my last boyfriend and stuff. But like, I remember my mom just had a moment and she's like, do you love him? And I was like, don't talk to me about this. Like, don't, I don't want to make eye contact with you. Like, don't, it was just so weird. Cause like, especially growing up, like they were way stricter when I was younger. And so like, that's where I learned how to interact with them, was like, okay. Right.
Growing up with them in Fort Collins, Colorado, and they're Muslim.
Yeah.
I was actually in Fort Collins, Colorado in around 2003, very soon to when George W. Bush declared war on Iraq.
Yeah.
And we were in a bar or a karaoke bar.
Yeah.
And they blasted that Toby Keith song. We'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American. And everyone's like chanting, raising their beer. And I was like mortified.
Oh my God.
And I actually went, sat in the car, and I waited for my hosts who were putting me up for the night to come back. I was like scared. And damn. I'm, you know, and I don't look like the enemy.
Yeah.
Were you frightened?
I was in the Middle East during that. So
Were your parents in the Middle East as well?
No, it's crazy. I mean, I experienced reverse racism as like an American.
You look like an American.
I sounded like an American.
Right.
I remember the kids used to make fun of how I said apple. They're like, apple! It's apple. I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, right, we made the language. We didn't. But
so your parents weren't in the States when?
No. We'd only come back for some. So I was gone from 2001 to 2004 or 2005. We'd only come back over summer break. And so I wasn't in school, so I didn't really deal with kids. So I never experienced that chunk of Arab Muslim racism. Yeah, that's what people tell me. Like, I really got lucky. Like, I've heard horror stories, like people getting their hijabs pulled off, or like spitting gum into hijabs, and like just all this aggression. I mean, I don't necessarily look too Arab either.
No, you
so
don't.
Like, I don't deal with
people probably looking like there's something not American about
her.
Yeah,
they're like, she looks dangerous, but I don't know how.
Right, I can't figure it out. Probably.
Ethnically ambiguous is what they call it in the biz.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I haven't dealt with a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I'm also like very outspoken and like I sound American, you know, so.
Do your parents look more Arabic?
We don't really look that Arabic, no. I mean, my dad, no, not really. Like, we could be anything. They could be Italian. My mom does not look Arabic. She's super fair-skinned.
Right.
Yeah, my family unit, not really. So even at that, like, maybe like Colorado people are nicer. I don't know. I mean, I do know that that's something people say about folks from Colorado's, they're just nicer.
Yeah.
But I do know that there was racist shit that went on there, so.
Did you feel any difference between when Obama was in office and now with Trump in office? Is there
How so?
just like, you know, because he's kind of drummed up fear of anyone outside of America.
I don't know. I live in a nice Los Angeles bubble, but I will say, like, I'm wary of like doing colleges in the middle of America. Like, I just don't know how people respond. I'm very aware too, because a lot of my act is about being Muslim Arab, you know, Arab Glish.
You
kid.
Talk about it,
a lot, and so it just interests. Sometimes, like, if it's like, I am afraid to travel with it. I mean, I go international with my set all the time, and people love it because they're like, oh, like, you know, cultural idiosyncrasies, and like, oh my God, my parents are whatever, wherever your parents are from could get lost in translation, right? Because we all have, you know, those moments. So it travels well internationally, but like, I don't think I would do well in the South.
When you said I'm from Iraq, they'd be like,
"Ooh, this Mexican is Arab. What the fuck? Where'd they breed those? Shawarma burrito."
Maybe you'd be surprised if you find the right place in the South.
That's true. I also think, I was talking to another comic. Her name's Etheria Kube. And she
was on this podcast.
Oh, she was?
She was, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I love her. Mm-hmm. She's Palestinian-American.
Yeah.
But she's from Alabama. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And so, so I'm like curious to talk to her about like what it's like.
And she was back and forth.
Yeah. And so like, I think a lot of, it's funny because I reverse stereotype people. I'm like, oh, you're from the South. You must hate me. You know? And so I feel like that must breed a lot of conflict too, is, you know, expecting to be hated or expecting to be treated differently.
Right.
Whereas I'm sure a lot of that's rooted in truth, but.
Yeah. Why did you go back to the Middle East in 2001?
2001. That was my parents wanted us to have like a cultural experience. So we moved to Bahrain.
Okay, they took you there. And it was right before 9/11.
Right before 9/11.
Boy, did you get lucky.
I was like, what the fuck? Like,
right.
So there's no Taco Bell here. And now all of a sudden.
Right. So you were exotic American until 9/11.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like all this anti-American stuff probably.
There was some protests, yeah. I mean, I never felt threatened for being American, but I just remember people being like, oh, you're American. Mm-hmm. And I remember like, you know, you'd see some protests in the street and like, I think I've seen like an American flag burn, and I was like sitting there like, they don't know who I am.
Now, did that happen when George W. declared war on Iraq?
Yeah.
That's when.
But then it was like super interesting too, because I'm American Iraqi. Right. So like, I was like, wow, every which side of me hates every which side of me.
You're at war with yourself.
I'm at war with myself. That's why I'm like, even the half Sunni, half Shiite, full shit show. Like, it's a shit show being me.
Yeah. What was the perspective over there of George Bush declaring war?
Oh, everyone fucking hated him. Everyone was like, he's a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is the sentiment towards Trump too, but I haven't been back.
Even though they knew that Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator.
I mean, some people were like, yeah, but like Saddam sucks. I remember people saying that, like, well, but it's better than Saddam and stuff. But then when you saw it played out, you're like, oh fuck, okay, this war is deadly. Like, you know, people are losing everything and their families and stuff. I mean, it was mostly a negative sentiment.
It was.
It was crazy. It's so crazy to talk about this because it just feels like a different life. It feels like a story I'm telling you.
Right.
As opposed to something I lived through.
Yeah. Well, you were younger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we all...
We're older now.
Yeah. Don't say that word.
That's the one truth.
Yeah. Fine.
Talk about living in the now.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, no. Time doesn't... Have you... I have the power of now on an audiobook.
Uh-huh.
And Eckhart Tolle's voice is so funny. He sounds like a robot.
Yeah, it's very easy to fall asleep.
Too. So yeah, I'm like, the power of wait, hold on, goes to embrace the now. Oh, I can't even do it.
Yeah, I can't even tell where he's from.
He's German.
He's German.
Yeah,
I couldn't even tell.
He's like, German. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I read the book and I was like, wow. And I listened to the audiobook and I was like, I'm having trouble listening to
this. It's the only audiobook that's easier to read than listen to.
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm like, okay, what did he just say? And I have to like go back and I'm like, huh? Yeah. I'm like, well, great. Now I'm not being in the now. Now I'm in the rewind.
Right. You should do everyone a favor and you read the audiobook.
Yeah.
And put it out as an alternative.
The power of now. I have a great voice for that. Mm-hmm.
So you're here in New York. You're doing some shows.
Mostly at Gotham for the New York Arab American Comedy Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the Stand Up New York last night, doing a show in Brooklyn. I'm doing the Living Room tonight in Brooklyn.
Nice.
Have you done that show?
The Living Room show at Postmark Cafe?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in, Okay. Trying to remember. It's in Dumbo.
Oh, good. So it's not too far, not too deep Brooklyn.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why is that place called Dumbo?
Down under the Manhattan Bridge overpass. It's an acronym.
Oh.
Yeah, the old acronym.
white person did that, didn't they?
Probably a real estate developer did it to make it sound cool. It's really just like a noisy area under a subway and a bridge.
That's true.
And like, we got to make it sound cool so people want to move
Dumbo.
Here.
Yeah, that's true. I love the Dumbo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Bushwick was East Williamsburg for the longest time. And then when Bushwick became a thing, it's like, oh, it's Bushwick. Actually.
Who names these things?
Like real estate people.
What's a Bushwick?
Oh, I don't know. That's something for
Why do they name it something cool like Stellar Keller? Like, why? I would live in Stellar Keller over Dumbo.
You could buy the area when you become rich and famous.
That's
and
what I was thinking.
Change it to your name.
Yep.
Change it to whatever you want.
Change it to Manifestation Nation.
So, thanks so much for talking to me.
Of course. This is awesome.
Yeah.
I like hearing the sound of my voice. So, anything.
And I feel like we missed a bunch. Like, we didn't talk about you going to Spain. We didn't talk about you being in Thailand.
It's because I jump around so much. I am just a wealth of experience and also adrenaline. And I'll come back.
Okay. We'll get to that.
We won't popcorn. We'll have a map of where the conversation is going, and we'll stick to the roadmap.
Okay. I doubt that'll happen.
I know it's not going to happen. I can't even read maps. Let's be real.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, thanks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.